commemoration of the disappearance day of Shripad Madhvacharya, who is the Acharya, main Acharya, the modern day in our disciplic succession. So we'll be speaking about him today, but first we'll chant the prayers to the departed Vaishnavas on page 56 of the songbook.
Corona Patio.
Acharya, Acharya, Madhvacharya, Madhvacharya, Jaya Madhvacharya. Paramahansa Paravidacharya, also Tera, Satishi Shimad, His Divine Grace Savaya Chadanana Bhaktivedanta Gosami Srila Prabhupada Gija, Iskan Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Gijayana, Anantakoti Voishna Vrindagajaya, Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur Gijaya, Ram Sai Kahoshi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sidwaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrindikajai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopakabhita Sayam Kunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavan Kijai Maturanam Kijai Jagannatha Sami Kijai Yamuna Mai Kajai, Shimati Lassi Devi Kajai, Santhita Bhakta Vrindi Kajai. Go, Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Kijai. So we will read the translation of this poem by Narottama Das Thakur. He who brought the treasure of divine love, and it was filled with compassion and mercy, where such a personality as Srinivasacharya gone? Where my Swarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where my Raghunath Bhattan, Gopal Bhatta? And where is Krishna Das Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottama Das simply weeps. So today is the commemoration of the disappearance day of Shripad Madhvacharya. So we're going to speak a little bit about his history. But first, a little interesting information. He is, of course, the modern-day Acharya in the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, that originally comes from Lord Brahma. Is it nice? And there's four Sampradayas, of course. There's the Brahma Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya, the Kumara Sampradaya and the Lakshmi Sampradaya. And all those Sampradayas begin with Krishna, Vishnu. So Krishna, Dharmam Tu Sakshat, Bhagavat Pranitam. That Dharma only comes from God, not from some theologian. And so these particular individuals, they present Krishna consciousness according to the way that Krishna presented it, according to time, place, and circumstance. You can turn it up a little bit, yeah. So, anyway, so there's Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma, after Lord Brahma, there's Narada Muni, then Vyas, and then all the way down to Madhvacharya, and from Madhvacharya, of course, we are descending in our disciplic succession. And it says that anybody who takes spiritual knowledge outside of a disciplic succession, it's worthless. Sampradaya Vinaya Mantras Tainish Palamataha. Even the mantra will not be effective. Okay, that's good. So, Madhvacharya appeared, according to some biographers, and a lot of this biography that we're going to present is hagiographic, and that's a fancy word for all of you, which means sometimes, or many times, biographers tend to embellish different stories about their particular individual. You know, they attribute different things happening. So I am making reference to the Madhva Vijaya, which was written by one of Madhvacharya's disciples. And so I'm sure that some of the things may be embellished in here. But the main point is that the tattva means the different truths, the different essential aspects, like as the jiva soul, the supreme personality of Godhead, and the material energy and the spiritual energy. All those are adequately or properly described. This is the point. For example, you have one book called the Bhakti Ratnakara, which is a famous book about Narottama Das Thakur, Srinivasacharya primarily, and also Shyamananda Goswami and some of the other direct followers of Srila, of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said there's a lot of stuff that's embellished in there. But he advised his disciples to read it nonetheless. Okay? So he appeared, nonetheless, because of the tattva and the bhavs and the descriptions of the Siddhanta in it. So nonetheless, we're going to make reference to that particular biography of Shripad Bhattacharya. As I mentioned before, he appeared in this world in 1238 and left this world in 1317. And ontologically, it's very interesting, he is considered to be the incarnation of the son of Vayu, which is means he was the brother of Hanuman. Nice. And also the brother of Bhimsen. These are the three Vayu Putras, or the sons of Vayu. That means they had great strength. They were like supermen. And we'll see. In his pastimes, he pretty much exhibited the activities almost of a superman, even from his very, basically from his very birth. So before he was born, there was an announcement made. Some man, as I described who it was, just announced at the temple that the son of Vayu was going to be born. Vayu means the wind god, in case some of you don't know. And he would appear in Udupi. Of course, Udupi was the is the place where Madhvacharya had his primary temple. We'll be describing a little bit about that. And some interesting stories from his childhood. His father and his mother, in order to have him as a son, it's described they subsisted only on milk for 12 years. I've seen people do that, not maybe for 12 years. So as soon as the baby was born, within a few days, because following the Vedic injunctions, they took the baby to the temple. And on the way back, baby Madhvacharya, of course, on the way back from the temple, there was a man who was possessed by a rakshasa. And what happened is that they touched, somehow or other, they touched Madhvacharya, who was known as Vasudeva at that point. They touched his feet to this man, and the man became cured immediately. And he was such a voracious eater that it's described in this biography that he drank his mother's milk every half an hour. His mother didn't get much chance to rest. So there is this ceremony, Vedic ceremony called Anaprasna, in which the child gets their grains for the first time. Somebody it's 5 months, 7 months, when the child is ready to eat grains. And he did something amazing during this Anaprasna ceremony. That his mother wasn't there. Mother and father weren't there. She had gone out. And his sister was there, who was a young girl. And she just gave him, it's described, 40 kilos of horse grains. And he ate the whole thing up. I mean, he had a voracious appetite because he was strong. When he was young, it's described that he would grab the bull's tail and ride the tail. Like Krishna did that, not with a bull, he did that with the calves. Don't try it with a bull.
that would be quite dangerous. And there's one story, which actually Srila Prabhupada told. So here's a story Srila Prabhupada told also, that once upon a time, there was a man who was owed money by Vasudev, that's Madhvacharya's father. And so this man came to the house to collect the money, and the man just sat down and he said, "I'm not moving until you pay me the money." And so in those days, for someone to be in debt was quite embarrassing. Just like we told the story about Advaitacharya the other day, how Kamalakanta Vishwas was begging money from King Prataparudra to pay off the debt, and Lord Chaitanya got very angry at Kamalakanta Vishwas for doing that, because it's considered a great embarrassment to owe money or to beg money to pay a debt. So this man, he just sat there to get his money back, and little Vasudev, who's about 4 or 5 years old, he brought forth some tamarind seeds to pay the man. And he put the tamarind seeds in the man's hand, and the tamarind seeds turned to gold. Prabhupada actually tells those stories, not from this other biography. And so the man was very satisfied. He went away with his debt being paid, his money being paid, wasn't his debt. And another story that's told in the biography is that when his parents went to a marriage, he wandered off. He was real small, 34 years old. He wandered off and he started visiting different temples. And finally, he got back and the parents were worrying. You know, he had visited all these temples. And they asked, you know, why is it, or how did you get back? How did you visit these temples? You're just a baby. And he said, "Lord Vishnu took me to all these different temples." So he definitely had a very intimate relationship with Krishna. He had a perfect memory, photographic memory, so he learned everything immediately. He used to correct his father's pronunciation, which must much to the consternation of his father, because his father was from Brahmin family and he was very proud of his learning. So he said, would say, "Dad, that's not really how you recite it. You do it like this. Your pronunciation's not correct." And this is like 4 or 5 years old. He was doing that. So the father, of course, was pleased with his son. Actually, it said that a father is very pleased with the son, or the parents are pleased with the children, when the children surpass them in learning. At 5 years old, he took initiation, Upanayanam. And at that age, too, there was a big demon, a snake demon named Manimon, who had 3 heads, and he killed that demon just by his toe. And that demon was previously fought by Bhimsen. And whenever his mother wanted him, Prabhupada also told this story, too. He was definitely a son of the wind god. He actually stated that, too. I mean, people ask, you know, how do you know he was the son of the wind god? He actually told the devotees that, "I am the son of the wind god." So when his mother wanted him, and even though he was quite some distance away, maybe 1, 2, 3 kilometers away, he would actually jump and arrive where his mother was calling him. When he went to school, he appeared to be inattentive, and the teacher got very upset with him and accused him of not studying, not being attentive. And so then he said to the teacher, "You know, I know this material." And he came forth and recited all the verses perfectly, and also recited all the verses for the future lessons. In other words, he was studying Sanskrit, which takes many, many years. You have an elaborate grammar, Panini's grammar. Another time, his teacher's son had a headache, and Vasudev, he cured the headache just by blowing in the teacher's son's ear. His guru was named Achyuta Preksha, and it's described, at least in this biography, that previously Achyuta Preksha was a bumblebee in his last life, and he was fed by Draupadi. That's how he got the benefit of being the guru of Sri Padmavacharya. So, of course, he had many disagreements with his guru because his guru was a monist. That means his guru believed that everything was one. You understand that I'm God. You know, we're all one. Ultimately, we'll become self-realized. We merge into the existence of the absolute truth, which is actually impersonal. So later on, it's described that his guru took shelter of him. In other words, he became the guru of his guru because he was actually understood the Siddhanta better. So his guru, though, was very attached to him. And his guru did not give him permission to go to the Ganges because he didn't want his disciple leaving, even though they had some philosophical arguments. It's not like, see, Ramanujacharya's guru was quite different. Ramanujacharya's guru, he tried to kill his disciple because his disciple knew more than him, or actually knew the Siddhanta, whereas the guru didn't know the Siddhanta. Ultimately, Ramanujacharya's guru also accepted initiation from Ramanujacharya. But in the case of Madhvacharya, Madhvacharya's guru did not try to kill him. He just got upset and later on took shelter of Sripad Madhvacharya. So his guru wouldn't let him go to see the Ganges. So Vasudeva, who was known as Purna Pragya at that time, brought the Ganges to Udupi every 12 years, you know, by his, I guess, mystic powers, brought the Ganges to Udupi. He established the proper understanding of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and by his guru, he was given the name Ananda Tirtha, you know, which means, meant that he became the head of the whole organization. Of course, Tirtha means a holy place. Ananda means a blissful holy place, like Ananda. Right now we are all experiencing Nirananda, which means misery. You know, Satchit Ananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So Ananda, so blissful holy place. So he had many arguments with different personalities. First he defeated Jains, and it's described that many of them committed suicide after being philosophically defeated by him. I mean, it is quite traumatic to have all the beliefs that you've held dear to your heart completely destroyed in a few moments. You know, your whole perspective on life, your whole goal in life. And so they committed suicide. And then there was another individual named Bodhisagara. He was a Buddhist. And Bodhisagara, instead of arguing with Madhvacharya, he ran away. He showed up one day and he was going to argue. And Bodhisagara got so nervous, he said, well, let's wait till tomorrow to have our discussion. And so he disappeared. So here's another story about him eating. One time he had a very big meal and he was offered 200 plantains. That's a banana, cooking banana sometimes. And he ate them all with no problem. And so then he went further south. Actually, he was born, as I mentioned before, in Karnataka, which is not all the way in the south, it's like in the middle. That's where Bangalore is. So he went further south and he had a discussion with the head of the Shankarite organization. Shankarite organization means Shankaracharya, who was an incarnation of Lord Shiva, preached impersonal philosophy to bring the people back to the Vedic literatures. So anyway, and so he had a discussion with this gentleman, Vidyasankara, who wanted to defeat Madhvacharya by stealing his books. So he thought, you know, if he doesn't have his books, I can easily defeat him because he can't make references to anything. But fortunately for Madhvacharya, he had a perfect memory. So he was able to defeat this man. And later on, the king, Jayasingha, that means victorious lion. It's a nice name for a king. Jayasingha found out who had stolen the books, and he put this Vijayasankara in prison. Because Jayasingha became a disciple of Sripad Madhvacharya. Another miracle that he performed, which is really interesting, one time he was going through a village, and there was a pregnant lady who had no water to drink. So he put his danda on the ground, struck it on the ground, and a well came, water came, or spring came from that hole in the ground. He did write what's called a Gita Bhasha. As far as his writings, he had quite extensive writings. First of all, this Gita Bhasha means a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. And that commentary on the Bhagavad Gita was referred to by Srila Prabhupada when Srila Prabhupada was writing his Bhaktivedanta commentary on the Gita. Srila Prabhupada very much respected Madhvacharya's commentaries on the Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Madhvacharya also wrote a commentary on the Vedanta Sutras, which is called Anuvyakaran. And this is his most famous commentary. Also wrote a commentary on the Mahabharata called the Tat Paratanirnaya, that's right. And this commentary, he wrote a lot of it from the first person perspective, like from Bhimsen's perspective, like as if he had been there. And in this commentary on the Mahabharata, he stated something very interesting. He said that the present version of the Mahabharata has been contaminated. In other words, things have been added, things have been taken away, and things have been changed in the Mahabharata. And so he didn't consider the present version to be authoritative. In fact, there are at present something like 80-something different versions of the Mahabharata. And some of them differ, I wouldn't say radically, but they differ with some of the details. And one of the details they differ with is the birth of Srila Vyasadeva. Srila Vyasadeva, of course, was born, as we mentioned previous class, from Satyavati and Parashara Muni. And in the northern version of the Srimad Bhagavatam, you have Parashara Muni meeting Satyavati. That's the fisher lady, you know, she's driving a boat. You have Parashara Muni meeting Satyavati on the boat, and he proposes to her to have a relationship right in the middle of the river, and they go to an island, and Vyasadeva is born immediately on an island. No marriage, no none besides that. And then in the South Indian version of the Mahabharata, you have them have a regular marriage ceremony, and then Vyasadeva is born as a result of that marriage. So, because South Indian, they tend to be much more conservative than North Indians. So, you know, which one is right? I don't know. And so even the scholars, in attempting to come up with what's called the critical edition of the Mahabharata. Critical edition means that if you have many editions of a particular work, yet you analyze them all, you know, according to the linguistically. There's another thing called Lato chronology, which I'm not going to tell you what it means. You analyze it according to the style of Sanskrit. You analyze it according to the style of writing. You analyze it according to the consistency. And you understand, you try to come up with the original version of what you think is the original version. That's called a critical edition of a particular work. And the but the scholars were never able to come up with a critical edition of the Mahabharata. So therefore, we do not get confused when the details given in the Mahabharata are different from the Srimad Bhagavatam. We accept the Srimad Bhagavatam. The difference, the reason that the Mahabharata has been changed in different ways is that the Mahabharata was not passed down unbroken in disciplinary succession. Whereas the Bhagavatam was, whereas the Gita was, but the Mahabharata wasn't. And therefore, we do not take it so much absolute, the quotes from the Puranas when they were not passed down to cyclic succession. I mean, one quote from a Purana we accept completely is from the Brihad Naradiya Purana. Does anyone know that quote? Yeah, that's right. Harinam, 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 Harinam Eva Kevalam, Kalonish Deva, Nishdeva, Nishdeva, Gataranta. Ta. In this day and age, there is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way, other than chanting Hare Krishna. But in general, we have to be careful about approaching the different Puranas. And we find many times devotees just like pick and choose their favorite version or verses from the Puranas to establish a particular philosophical point. And many cases they end up fighting each other, utilizing different quotes from the Puranas, or even different quotes from Prabhupada. Prabhupada told that story, of course, there were two philosophers arguing one time about how a particular fruit fell from a tree. And, you know, they were discussing whether it was cut by a knife or scissors. You know, there's some scissors knife thing. And they were having a really big argument about it. And the argument became so, let's say, intense, they started beating each other up about it. And then what happened is that the one who was, let's say, the knife proponent, threw the scissor proponent into the river. And the scissor proponent was drowning, and as he was drowning, only his hand was sticking above the water. And he held his hand up, made a V, like a scissors, like that, just to prove his point. They had the last word, which is funny. I mean, people really have tempers. I was just, the other day, I saw on YouTube, there was a video of a fight in the Indian Parliament. You ever seen that video? Literally, they tore the microphones out of their stands, and they were hitting each other with the microphones. They're saying, you know, well, we're just one step away from that in our U.S. Congress, isn't it? It's happened before in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Really?
19th century.
Oh, 19th century. They didn't have microphones then.
They used sticks.
They used sticks. People get so much into, you know, being right about something. It's better to be a Brahmin. A Brahmin doesn't, you know, fight like that. You know, like you have the case of Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, when they were challenged by this Digvijaya, just in order to save time, they just signed a certificate like this. So, anyway. So Madhvacharya composed the commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, and he wanted to show it to Srila Vyasadeva, who was ultimately his guru, not initiating guru, but siksha guru, instructing guru. And so he went to Uttarabhadari to show him this commentary. And that means like it's a section of the Himalayas that you really can't go to. It's not accessible to ordinary human beings. So he was climbing up the Himalayas, and his follower Satya Tirtha, his primary follower, tried to follow him, and Madhvacharya waved his hand, and Satya Tirtha flew through the air all the way back to the base camp of the mountain. So he had these mystic powers. We also mentioned he composed the Brahma Sutra commentary, and then there was discovered the Bhavishya Purana. The Bhavishya Purana means, Purana means old, Bhavishya means what will happen in the future, so it's almost like a contradictory, there will be. So the Bhavishya Purana, 5,000 years old, predicted Madhvacharya's meeting with Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya in Navadvip. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also mentions this too, as Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. So he was told by Lord Chaitanya, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur too, not to describe Achincha Beda Beda Tava, which is Lord Chaitanya's philosophy, as the world was not ready for it at that particular time. Mm. So another story of his amazing strength was the one time his primary follower, Satyatirtha, was attacked by a Bengali tiger. And a Bengali tiger is not a pussycat. I mean, recently in America, there was someone who was attacked by a mountain lion. And he was physically able to defend himself. I don't know if you saw that story. But the mountain lion is, you know, it's like a big pussycat. A little big. But a Bengali tiger is as big as a cow. Anyone here ever seen a Bengali tiger? In the zoo. They're big, isn't it? They're not just like, you don't take them home and keep them as pets. So this Bengali tiger attacks Satyatirtha, and Madhvacharya personally, you know, grabbed this tiger, and the tiger went running away with his tail between his legs. Another night in Udupi, there was a ship. Udupi is by the sea. There was a ship that was actually going to run aground. That means it was going to hit the ground and be stuck. And so he saved the ship, it's described by this biography. This is in 1285, by creating a wind as he was swimming. He was actually very much into martial arts, very much into physical culture. It's described that in Madhvacharya's interactions with his disciples, he would be wrestling with his disciples. In other words, that was part, I guess it was part of the basic training. You wrestle with the guru. So he saved this boat, and they asked him, what do you want as a reward? He said, I just want some gopi chant. That's the tilak, you know, we all put on our forehead. And so, all right, so he took the gopi chand, and he put the gopi chand in the water, and it dissolved, and there was a deity of Balakrishna there. And that's Udupi Krishna, which you can go to see this deity today. In addition, he has the deities of Sita and Ram there. The very few devotees know when they go to visit Udupi. And these deities, there's pictures of them actually on the internet. These deities were previously worshipped by Hanuman in the Ikshvaku dynasty, the sun god dynasty. So there's many stories about these deities, and I told them in a previous class. He was challenged by a wrestler one time, and the wrestler was, you know, a very famous wrestler. And he said to the wrestler, I'm putting my big toe down. If you can move my big toe, you win. And so the wrestler wasn't able to move the big toe of Madhvacharya. So he advised people who wanted to do sacrifices with animals, just use flour and you put it in the shape of the animal. So this is actually very interesting. And then one time, he and his followers were going someplace and there was a king. And the king was arranging for the excavation of a lake. And the king wanted to engage Madhvacharya in excavating the lake. And so he engaged the king. he was very tricky, too. One time there were thieves who tried to steal from him. So he gave them a bag of stones, and he told them it was gold, and they fought with each other and killed each other. So in the second visit to Vyasadeva, the Vyasadeva told him to explain the Mahabharata. Now, we already explained that commentary. And he also wrote a commentary on the Ramayana, the Valmiki Ramayana, which is the story of Lord Ram. And he took his disciples to Hastinapur. Hastinapur, of course, is the place of the Pandavas and Kurus. And he told them stories from memory about what had happened there. You know, Mahabharata stuff. But things that weren't in the Mahabharata. So he told them stories, practically first-hand stories. Then, in Hastinapur, around Hastinapur, he dug up a particular area. And in that place, he showed them Bhimsen's club, which had been buried in the ground. And then he reburied it. I mean, one time on the internet, people did some Photoshop, and they, I don't know if you remember that, and they said, we've discovered Bhim Sain's club, you know, but it wasn't. It was just a Photoshop thing. But actually, Madhvacharya discovered Bhim Sain's club. Then he took his disciples to Kurukshetra and described everything there. Another interesting story is that there was a seed once, and he chanted a mantra to the seed. The seed grew into a tree and bore fruits. So he left this world, because today is his disappearance date, while speaking a commentary on the Upanishads. And as he was speaking, at least according to the biography, the demigods showered flowers on him, which covered him completely from head to toe. And when his disciples took away those flowers, his body wasn't there anymore. At least that's the standard story for his disappearance. So, his philosophy, oh, actually, another point made by in his biography is that in Krishna Lila, he's known as a gopi known as Madhavi. And his philosophy is the Dvaitavad, also known as Tattvavada. Dvaita means two. So you see like pictures of Madhvacharya, you know, holding up two fingers, which means there's duality between the Lord and the living entities. I mean, really extreme duality. I mean, not actually... the Lord creates the living entities. It's not different so much from our philosophy, but he really, let's say, had many arguments against Ramanujacharya's philosophy, which is Vishishta Dvaita, purified. And anyway, Ramanujacharya's philosophy was more or less like our philosophy, Achintya Beta Beta Tattva, you know, very, very similar. And he had many arguments against Ramanuja's philosophy because he considered the difference between the Lord and the living entities to be more radical than was presented by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because we know, according to the Gita, Mame Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, that we are Ansa. We are part and parcel of Krishna. We have the same nature as Krishna, the same quality as Krishna, just different quantity. In other words, like a drop of water, it probably gives the example that there's a drop of water in the ocean. Let's say if the ocean was uniformly comprised of different chemicals. I mean, this is theoretically. We know it's not because, you know, you can go to some place, some places there's less salt, some places there's more salt. But let's say theoretically the ocean is comprised of chemicals that are uniformly distributed. So our philosophy is that as a drop of water in the ocean has the same chemical constitution as the entire ocean, proportionately, of course. And so that's the Achintya Beta Beta Tattva philosophy, this philosophy in the Gita. And so we are the same nature as Krishna. Like Krishna had desire to play, we have a desire to play. We want loving relationships. We are eternal. I mean, all these different qualities. We want to be appreciated. Krishna wants to be appreciated. So all these different qualities are there in Krishna and in us, but in a very small quantity. And we can enjoy, as Prabhupada often gives the example, by connecting with Krishna, with the whole. And just like Prabhupada says, it's like the hand. The hand is part and parcel of the body. And the only way the hand, you know, typical example Prabhupada gives, the only way the hand can enjoy is by feeding the body, not by squeezing the food by itself. Okay, any questions yet?
What's the connection between Madhva Sampradaya and the Gaudiya Madhva Sampradaya, our Sampradaya?
Well, we are in the same Sampradaya.
But there is a connection. Philosophically also.
Oh, philosophically. Yeah, Madhvacharya gives nine main points. You know, Krishna is God and is also known as Govinda. The spirit soul is eternal. It's almost like, it's practically the same as Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Dashamula. you know, he has 9 points, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has 10 points, and the points are they can be connect very much connected to each other. The only difference is the subtle difference of a Chinchabeda Tattva compared to the Tattvavada philosophy. You know, it's actually a very subtle difference.
Of course, Lord Chaitanya did go defeat the Tattvavadas.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did defeat the Tattvavadas, who were very upset when they got defeated. But it's a subtle difference, but philosophers and sannyasis like to deal with subtle differences, especially when they have the internet.